Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
If you get up at this hour, and I'm assuming you are, it's weird, it's daylight. It's like somebody flips a switch sometime in late April, right?
But it's great, isn't it?
It is great. The city looks fabulous as you're coming in from any direction.
Great today.
Sun rising over the lake. It's still over the lake, right? They didn't move it.
Nope.
Sun still rises over the lake. Yeah. So welcome. Hi, it's Monday, and this is show number 889. At Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. And 312-981-7200 is the number. Texters and callers, you are welcome there. Everybody have a nice weekend?
Very nice weekend.
Very nice.
Yeah, worked
busy.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. Busy?
Mm-hmm.
Busy?
Yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Working. Mm-hmm.
Seventh floor, how'd you guys do?
Spent a little time outside for Earth Day. Had a great weekend.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I saw two out of three of my kids, so that was fun.
The one that didn't come home, that's the one you don't like as much?
He's studying. He's got finals in a couple weeks.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Steve, what'd you do for Earth Day? Like roll around in your lawn or something? Or?
No, I'm actually on the council for my dog park in my neighborhood. So we were there this weekend doing stuff, getting ready for the season.
Do the dogs know it's Earth Day?
They do not. No, every day is Earth Day to dogs at the dog park. So
you know, this March for Science rally that they had on Saturday, they were expecting 10,000 to 12,000. It was between 30,000 and 40,000 people.
Is that right?
Very peaceful.
How many of them were
march.
Nerds?
I don't want to speak to their nerdiness.
You didn't nerd profile?
I did not nerd profile, but you know how for the women's march they were wearing the pink hats with the little that look like little kittens?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were wearing brain hats. Did you get to see these?
Yeah, I saw some of them, and the signs are great.
They were fantastic.
Yeah, the signs are great all over the country.
Really
yeah.
good.
You don't want to anger a scientist.
No.
So I thought it was an important protest, and you know, a message delivered.
Yeah, great turnout.
It's not going to change, you know, how some people in charge may feel about things like climate change and other things. But it was a nice step.
And you know what's cool too is that when I was interviewing one of the organizers, he said, "Think of Chicago. Think of all the contributions that Illinois and Chicago has made to science through Argonne, Fermilab.
Sure.
I mean, every major." Company.
I got a key to Fermilab. Anybody want to go out there?
Chicago is a big science city.
Yeah, I'll go.
You guys go out to Fermilab?
Sure. Let's do a remote there.
Turn on the big collider.
You have to be quiet when you sneak your sneak your way in.
Yeah.
Steve, I told you can't come in that door.
Wait, what does this button do?
there's a good Spike Odell story about Fermilab. Spike is like Steve Grzanich. He's a space nut. And, Steve, you would know the term probably. I don't, but there's some astronomical occurrence that happens where the sky just brightens. The sky in the middle of the night, there's some star cluster or something, and the sky just...
Like a supernova.
The flash of light, like that, like a supernova.
Supernova, yeah.
Liz Kerr knows all about that.
So Spike, because his wife Karen's not nuts, Spike drives out near Fermilab, you know, where it's completely dark, and the side road... And waits for this supernova to hit. And it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and a cop comes by.
I remember story. This is hilarious.
So he's sitting on the hood of his car, and, you know, everybody knows Spike Odell. Spike, hey, how you doing, buddy?
Right.
So within 5 minutes, instead of getting a ticket and arrested, he's convinced the cop to wait. Now, the cop's fascinated, by the way, that this guy, and he didn't know Spike, this guy's either drunk, crazy, or both. But he says the sky's going to light up. All right, let me see if it's going to light up. And Spike looks at his watch and looks at his phone, and he counts it down.
Oh.
And he counts it down to within a second.
Yeah.
And the sky lights up, and the cop goes crazy. Whoa, coolest thing ever.
Now, that could never happen today because, you know, it's a Department of Energy facility, so he'd probably be arrested immediately.
Yeah, well, this was a non-Fermilab policeman who I believe then gave Spike my key. And then they just went in and they walked around.
Awesome.
It's an awesome story.
It's like the great pumpkin. You're waiting, waiting. Right. Oh, but this time it actually shows up.
But can't you see Spike sitting out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, completely.
What if it never showed up? He would have taken
it. Boy,
it'd
be great if the family would come out here with me.
Totally geeked out. He still has his, I wonder if he still has his flight simulator. Remember, he'd go home and fly.
Oh, I'm yeah, sure I'm he sure does.
You know, I tell you, when there are these asteroid meteoroid events, I always go out and do that. I sit in my car in the middle of darkness in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Anywhere in particular in Wisconsin?
Usually wherever I go where it's dark. So I just keep driving until it's not where there aren't any lights anymore.
You know, the coolest sky I've ever seen, ever, 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 in Arizona, in Red Rock Country. What's the name of the town? There's a famous town.
Sedona.
Sedona, that's mm-hmm. it. Sedona, the sky is about 3 feet above your head.
It's beautiful.
It's so cool there. When you climbed the mountain road up to get there.
There's no city lights.
So beautiful.
Yeah, they're actually one of the big national parks there does this. They've taken advantage of that now. They have the dark sky, basically dark sky tours where you go and you camp out in the middle of nowhere and you take pictures of the sky, and it's supposed to be very cool.
And only one person per trip is murdered.
Right? If you have a chance to see the Northern Lights, either, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to go to Iceland to see them. Mm-hmm. You could. But, you know, if you go way west...
You're like a spy for Iceland now.
No, I'm not. I seriously. But that, you're right. It's just another phenomenon that's so beautiful in the sky.
Have you ever seen the Milky Way? Anybody?
I've had a Milky Way.
I
quite
love
tasty.
Those candies. Mm-hmm.
We had it quite tasty. What do you mean, seen the Milky Way?
The actual Milky Way. Like, actually looked up into the night sky.
Oh, looked at the cluster?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have. I've seen the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, you would know if you saw the Milky Way. It's apparently hasn't been seen. 88% of the country has never seen the Milky Way.
What's it look like?
It's amazing. I mean, you've probably seen photographs of
it. Does it look like a Milky Way?
It does.
It have a wrapper?
You can see the complete outline of it. It's a big chocolate bar.
Does it have a nougat?
Nougat's a different cluster.
Center. Yeah.
That's a Three Musketeers.
Yeah, but light pollution is such a big deal now. And this is actually Dark Sky Week.
Is this really Dark Sky Week?
It is. Dark Sky Week, yeah.
That is cruel. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
So good to have a legitimate nerd on the show, Steve. I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the Top 6 at 6.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
6.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is 6.
The Top 6 at 6 on 720 WGNS.
We got to talk to super salesman Jeff Hill and his people. Why isn't the Top 6 sponsored? Should be a major name title sponsor.
Maybe there's so many people vying for it.
Think they're fighting?
The high bidder.
That's probably true. Probably what's going on. Here's the deal. If you listen to all of our Top 6 at 6 and pay attention, I'll reward you with tickets to Spamilton when we're done. But not until. So don't call now. Item number one, that election in France has come down to two people. One is Marie Le Pen, and she is in a runoff to determine the next president versus the more moderate candidate, one Emmanuel Macron. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Macron is 38 years old and is a moderate, cutting more of the mold of, say, to make it identifiable, of a Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And Marie Le Pen is more of your Donald Trump.
Right.
The runoff will happen in 2 weeks. They only were a couple of points apart this weekend in the setup to determine who is in the runoff. But in poll after poll after poll after poll, and I know polls are iffy, especially in this country, but the polls in France held up very well. And in all the polls head-to-head, Macron has a 20-point lead on Le Pen.
I think he will win. But this is close. It was very close. It was only 2 points off.
Yeah, I heard something really riveting about their polling. There's a person on describing how they do their polling.
What do they do?
They actually add other data points. Like they do. They look at social media. They look
croissant.
At,
do they add croissant?
Yeah, croissant. Other factors that go into the actual data,
so it makes it more accurate.
Yeah.
We might want to pick that up.
Right. I know.
Last
I was
year.
Thinking. Wow, we should do this.
May 7th.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, May 7th, yeah.
Item number two, President Obama's in town, visited Rosalind Pullman over the weekend to talk to young men about curbing violence in Chicago, and one would hope that when the Obama family returns here, that would be one of his signature issues. If you think of the greatest ex-president of modern time, that'd be Jimmy Carter and all the great things that Carter has done. Obama could certainly, as a young man, achieve great things. If he can stem the tide of violence in Chicago and work towards that. Today he's going to talk about civic engagement, community organizing, and then he's got a practice speech. It's funny because people haven't talked about this, but his speech is where today?
His speech will be at the Logan Center. That's the University of Chicago. Logan Center, it's on 60th Street.
There'll be 6 kids who can ask him questions.
Yeah.
Supposedly there's no limitations on the questions. but he's not there to talk about Trump. But you got to believe it's going to come up.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, this is his last speech before he goes off on the paid speech circuit.
Yeah.
So this is like a warm-up speech.
It is. It is. And there were still some students yesterday trying to get tickets. The tickets for this are all sold out. I don't want to say sold out. They were given out.
And a lot of the kids went, I'll get them tomorrow. I'll get them tomorrow. I'll get them tomorrow. I'm watching something on my phone.
On my phone.
Yeah. next. White House wants to project a lot of progress ahead of President Trump's 100th day in office. And by the way, each day this week, I will highlight some of the 100th day moments and talk about the run-up to 100 days. President Trump said he would reveal a proposal for a massive tax cut on Wednesday.
Right.
And then his budget director said, no, we're going to tell you what we might do. So he backed it down a little bit from huge. So that's coming up this week as well. And they're still making noise about possibly repealing or replacing Obamacare by the weekend.
And you're going to highlight every day this
sure
week.
Sure they are.
Every day this week you're going to highlight something of the
Yeah, we're going to play a lot of sound.
Okay.
From the first 100 days and go over it. Now, a poll out this morning shows that President Trump has the lowest approval ratings of any president since the 100th day standard started with FDR.
Mm-hmm.
The closest to President Trump was Gerald Ford. And in his first 100 days, he pardoned Richard Nixon, the most hated man in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he's beating Trump by about 10 or 12 points. The other thing that's of concern, if you're a Trump fan, or at least it should be, no president has ever ended his time in office with a higher approval rating than he had in the first 100 days. So in other words, 42% could be the high watermark. So that's a problem. Next, back in Washington and headed to fall off a cliff, Congress will stumble through this week and argue with each other. Whenever a light goes on, they'll run through traffic because they'll think it's a TV camera, and they'll try to get their names on television or on the radio or wherever on social media. And then by the end of the week, they'll take a break, a long deserved break after working a full week.
Isn't that unbelievable?
And then they'll be gone again. So after this week, the government funding, of course, runs out on Friday. There are several things they claim to want to watch and claim to want to get done, but they're putting in 4.5 full days of work this week.
Did you see? Well, ironically, the deadline to avoid the shutdown is exactly Trump's 100th day in office, but he was tweeting several times about this over the weekend.
Yeah, he thinks
too.
It's stupid now. It was right. A really good idea for a while ago. Now he thinks it's stupid.
Yeah.
Next. It's a sad story. Aaron Moran died this weekend. Chachi, 56 years old.
Joni.
Or Joni, I'm sorry. Yeah. Chachi's still alive. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Trump.
Yeah.
But Aaron Moran, who played the daughter on Happy Days for all those years, was found unresponsive in her mom's trailer in a trailer park. Not where sitcom stars usually end up, but she had sort of a rough go in the last 20 or 30 years since that show and her show ended. But we haven't heard anything as far as cause of death goes.
I'm just looking right now. It's still inconclusive. They're going to do they're doing the autopsy today.
And again, 56, which I don't know if you know this, Dave, is young.
Yes, it is.
And next. And this item is a Sandberg special. The official kickoff of wedding season is on because Rory McIlroy got married this weekend.
Oh, good mm-hmm. for Rory.
Rory McIlroy married his fiancée, Erica Stoll, Saturday in Ashford Castle. Ed Sheeran and Stevie Wonder both played, and fireworks filled the sky. Stevie Wonder doesn't seem to me to be Rory McIlroy, Stevie Wonder. Which of those two don't belong?
Right. Do they get paid for that? Like if Stevie Wonder, does he get paid for this? Or is it because
if he's
they're
a
friends?
Friend, no.
Okay.
But
he doesn't.
But if you can show me one picture on the internet of Stevie Wonder hanging out with Rory McIlroy, I'd be impressed.
You know, and you got a life ahead. You got to top fireworks in a castle, man. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, he does set a high bar.
Wow.
Yeah, because you really, I mean, I've said this before. When you get married as a man, men, listen up to this because I come from a world of great knowledge.
Okay.
When you start off in that married relationship, you have to set the bar. For instance, I'm not the first person to say this, but it's absolutely true. Like the first time you go to Walgreens, take an hour, even if it's right across the street.
Right.
Because you have to set the time frame of how long it takes to go to Walgreens.
So she won't say, hey, you used to go to Walgreens and be back in 5 minutes.
How can it possibly take you an hour to go to Walgreens? Right? It's always taken an hour. It's taken an hour since the first time I went.
Is that why you say you do the laundry better than us?
Well,
you cook better than us, amongst other things.
Yeah. It's all one big steaming pile. All right. So since you paid attention, I will do this now for you. Let's go caller 7. A pair of tickets to Spamilton. Spamilton, think Hamilton, but funny. At the Royal George Theater. Critics love it. Spamilton.com to get your own tickets if you don't want to try to win them now. 312-981-7200. Seventh caller wins. We're back with a big story next.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Most. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. By the way, thanks again to Builder Supply Outlet, who brought you the big story. And congratulations to Cheryl, who won the Spamilton tickets.
All right.
Let's go to Dr. Most. Good morning, Kev.
Hey there. How are you?
I am, you know, I feel like I turned a corner.
Yeah, you sound like you have, actually.
Yeah. I played 18 holes yesterday.
Well, then you know you have.
Yeah. And, you know, it was obviously a beautiful day. And, you know, there's no one cheering like on the 18th. You can make it, Steve.
Go, go.
You can make it.
Go.
You're in a cart. You'll be fine.
Go, 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 go.
But again, thanks to you and the fine people at CDH and Northwestern Medicine, back out and being a part of life again. It's been a long month, but I thank you as always.
Oh, no problem.
All right, so we're talking politics. Normally, we don't try to drag Dr. Most into politics, but here's an interesting tie. How long's it been since we talked about Poison?
Right.
Yeah. Not the rock band.
Mm-hmm.
No. Poison as in the stuff that could kill you.
Yeah.
Right? And who's famous for trying to kill you? Kim Jong-un. See what I did there? See how I tied it all together?
Oh.
Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. But this is an important thing, Doc, right? Because we've got stuff in our house that we need to be really careful about.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we do. We see the media, the cool poisoning things, and you see them in movies.
Like Putin. Putin's poisoning people left and right.
Yeah. Yeah. But we have to realize that, you know what, it happens at home. It happens here in all of our houses. We have opportunities to poison each other and poison our children, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's just a kind of a good reminder for people to understand what they can do in their own homes and then also what asset we have here in the state of Illinois that's going to allow you to get good information and protect your child.
Now, I've heard about a poison control line since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And I was a little kid when dinosaurs roamed the earth in the 70s. Yeah. Is it still available, the poison control line?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is one part that I won't say the state should be proud of right now, but Rush University, Rush Medical Center, started our poison control line in 1953. We are the oldest poison control line in the country and one of the largest. And fortunately, it's been taken over now by the IHA, the Illinois Hospital Association. But we need some funding from the state to keep it open. They can't fund it completely by themselves. So there's a little bit of politics there as well. But it's probably a great resource that many people probably don't know they have, but very important because when you need it, you need it.
800-222-1222. 800-222-1222. Easy to remember. We'll post it on all social media. And Doc will do the same. And then, you should add it to your contacts right now.
Absolutely. Put it in your cell phones right now. You don't have to say, oh, gosh, I remember it was a really simple number. Was it a whole bunch of twos? Was it a whole? Just put it in there. Put it under poison. If you pick up my phone right now and look, it's there. It's the number one that pops up when you go to the letter P. It's poison control.
Yeah.
It's simple. We use it in the office. Doctors use it all the time. But you want to have that number handy in case something happens and you have a question.
Going through your list, Doc, it's incredible. The things that we have every day in our homes that can lead to poisoning, including aspirin and mouthwash.
Yeah. You know, simple things that are around, and like you said, mouthwash. People don't realize how much alcohol is in mouthwash. Alcohol's in mouthwash because alcohol allows bacteria in your mouth to be killed for a short period of time. But the bad thing is that there's quite a bit of alcohol in some of these. You know, we have some that are 15-20%. And you're like, oh, who cares? You know, you're just swishing it around and spitting it out. Yeah, but you're not when you're a little kid. You see a parent do that, and then it's like great blue colors or red colors. It looks like they're Kool-Aid. And it doesn't take a whole bunch for a little 25-pound kid to get legally drunk and actually can go into a coma if they take too much. So it's one of those where you want to make sure you don't leave it on the counter, put it away, and be really careful with it.
What is syrup of ipecac?
So syrup of ipecac, and this goes back, Steve, you know.
And my grandmother talking about it.
Absolutely. Everyone used to have it in their house. Boy, Timmy ate too many of these. Give him syrup of ipecac, and he's going to throw up. And we'll get that out of his system. So it's a syrup that makes you vomit. And the bad thing is it makes you continue to vomit for a short period of time. You don't want to – people used to use it all the time for poisonings. Oh, he ate too much of this. Give him syrup of ipecac. No, it's not the best thing to do. Make sure you talk to a professional, because there's some where we don't want to give that at all. We want to stay as far away from that as possible, because we have other medications that are actually going to treat the ingestion that you had.
How about vitamins? I mean, I know we as adults, I take the gummy just because I like the taste. But kids, you can overtake vitamins, right?
Well, and you were mentioning aspirin.
Yes.
Yeah. When Doc, you and I are the same age. When we were kids, there was an aspirin called Congesperin, which I don't think they make anymore, which was orange.
Yeah.
And it tasted
chewable.
Great.
Oh, it's like a baby aspirin.
Chewable orange aspirin.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. Congesperin. And I had a cousin, did about a half bottle of it one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And next thing you know, you're in a hospital and the stomach pumping and all of that. So, but the vitamins, any of the stuff that tastes good, I think this is where you're going, right?
Yeah, the gummies, the Flintstones, anything that tastes good. Kids can mistake that for candy or something sweet.
Exactly. You know, think about gummy bears. We have vitamins that look like gummy bears. Well, if I'm a little kid, it's okay if I eat a handful of gummy bears, right? So, boy, there's a jar of gummy bears on the counter there. Unfortunately, it's not okay, especially if they have iron in them, which unfortunately some do now. So if it has iron in it, it's very concerning how many they ate. You want to make sure that you can at least guess how many they ate and kind of watch that. If they don't have iron in them, kid's going to get a little upset stomach, might get a little nauseated, but the water-soluble vitamins will be cleared, the fat-soluble vitamins will be stored, but it's going to be more of a discomfort. But iron can cause a lot of damage not only to the stomach as you first ingest it, but then also to the brain and the liver and the kidneys later on, like, you know, 2 days, 3 days later.
What else is in the medicine cabinet that we got to be worried about?
Well, you know, Steve, it's kind of interesting. You're talking about aches and pains and taking aspirin. You know, how about Bengay? You know, the old Bengay that I went out for a walk now and I remember to rub some of that on. Mm-hmm. That, again, has aspirin-like products in it. That equivalent of a teaspoon of it is close to 20 aspirin.
Oh, you're kidding.
So you're talking about a kid who says, you know what, I'm going to try some of that, I'm going to take some of that, or even taste some of it because they like the smell of it. Is a scary one.
So it'd be all of those, right? Icy hot, everything in that category.
Yep, they all have salicylates in them, and that's the biggest toxic thing for that product in kids.
All right, so if you are concerned that your kid's gotten into something, or you've mistakenly taken something, or whatever, and you call the poison control line, I'm sure they're going to talk you through what to do next. But if for some reason you're not on the phone with a pro or with a doc, what do you not do? What do you do?
Yeah, the first thing you don't do is, like I said, don't give them syrup of ipecac. That's the worst thing you can possibly do.
Thanks, Grandma.
If you say, hey, you know what, I'm taking them straight to the doctor, that's fine. You can do that. When you get to the doctor's office or you get to the emergency room, I'll tell you, we use the poison control line all the time. As a matter of fact, out of the close to 100,000 calls to that line, almost a quarter of them are us, our doctors calling, saying, all right, here's the situation. Here's the child. Here's how old they are. Here's the dose of what we think that they took. I have the bottle in front of me, and let me walk you through that. And then that's probably the most important thing, is at least get care. Don't try to care for itself, and don't say, oh, I'm just going to put Timmy to sleep, and we'll see, make sure that he's better in the morning.
But how about us as adults, too? I mean, if we accidentally, you know, if we're on high cholesterol or antidepressants, Motrin, anything even of that simple, Doc, and maybe you have a glass of wine or something that doesn't agree with you, and you think you might be, you know, toxic, for lack of a better word, what should we do?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Anytime you start a new medication, you should always have that discussion with your doctor. Your doctor's going to probably say it to you, hey, you know what, don't use excessive alcohol with this medication. But you have to know what it is, because it's so interesting when you look at the list of drugs that can interact with alcohol. I bet you all of your listeners listening right now that are taking any medication don't know whether or not they can have a drink or two drinks with that.
I bet you're right.
In fact, you know, there's a lot out there that can cause problems. I mean, think about it. How many people in the world are on statins right now? T- tons of people.
Sure.
But the combination of statins and alcohol can cause liver damage. Can cause, you know, increased bleeding in your stomach. So concerning. How many people are on blood pressure medicine? 10% of the country is on antidepressants. Antidepressants and alcohol have a bad combination. So it's always good to have that discussion with your doctor to make sure that you know what you're talking about and know that what medications you're on.
Because of all the medical stuff I've been dealing with in the last month, if I heard this question once, I heard it a million times, are you allergic to any meds? And there's one in particular that we found out just accidentally a few years ago called Lisinopril.
Uh-huh.
And my throat shut down and, you know, for whatever. My biochemistry and this particular drug didn't work. Yep. Is that technically poisoning if you're home alone and you take something and you feel an allergic reaction, or do you call a different number for that?
No, you can call that number, to be honest with you. But if you take a medicine and you think you're having an allergic reaction, in other words, you start to itch, you hives, you get short of breath, or you start to feel like your throat's closing up, call 911.
Okay.
Do not try to drive to the hospital. Do not try to drive to any healthcare facility. Call 911 because they can give you the medicine, the epinephrine medicine, right then and there to at least slow that down to get you to a position where you can be safely treated.
And if you are poisoned accidentally or by Vladimir Putin, keep whatever unused portion of what you think you took because docs are going to need to know what it is, right?
Correct. You know, you say, oh, it was a vitamin. We want to know exactly what the vitamin was. We want to know the strength of the vitamin. We want to know what it was. And you'll tell us it is Little Critters Gummy Bear X. I can tell you the databases that they have now for these can look that up, can tell you exactly what was in it, can see exactly what that child weighed. They do the math for you. You don't have to do anything fancy. They are going to tell you what to do.
Doc, can you be poisoned or can you get poisoning from old medicine, something that's a year or two old and you accidentally take it or too much of it?
Well, too much of it, absolutely. But old medicine usually is going to lose some of its potency. And as it loses its potency, it won't be as effective. So what we see there is people say, oh, you know what? Boy, that didn't seem to work. I'm going to take another one. And boy, two of them, maybe I'll take a third. And at that point, then you get to the toxic range because the medication is still there. It's just not working as well. And now you've essentially self-poisoned yourself.
It's Dr. Kevin Most with good advice, as always, and courtesy of our friends at Northwestern Medicine out there at CDH Hospital and all your Northwestern Medicine situations and locations. Remember, it's Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Doc, great stuff. Thank you for that.
You got it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Enjoy your day. And let's do traffic from Mary, and then we'll come back. And I got a couple other things to hit you with before we get into the 7 o'clock hour. And each day this week in the 7 o'clock hour, I will go over some aspect of Trump's 100 days.
You know there's only 5 days this week, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you said highlight, so I thought.
We're going to make the 7 o'clock hour longer, I think. All right, this French election. You want to know about Brigitte Macron?
Yes.
All right, this is not a deal, apparently, in France. Here, you know, I mean, it's a deal. Brigitte Macron is 63 years old. Emmanuel Macron, the guy that could be the next president of France, is 39. Now, you know, if you had a 63-year-old French dude and his 39-year-old wife, you'd go, oh, well, good for them.
Yeah.
But because it's the other way around, you know, it just feels different.
Yes.
So Macron met Brigitte when he was 15 at school. And his parents, not so happy.
No, I would think not.
So they approached the teacher, and who was married at the time, and said, you need to stay away from him. Because apparently the son admitted that there was something going on with the two of them.
Uh-huh.
They finally said, at least until he's 18. She said, I can't promise you anything. Macron's parents tried to split him up by sending him to Paris to finish his schoolwork. But they ended up getting together and staying together.
Right.
She has three children, including a daughter who works on his campaign. She, the wife, went to agenda meetings and is going to play a role in government if Macron wins.
Mm-hmm.
Her family are fairly wealthy chocolatiers in northern France. The one that really stands out in the list of things about her is this. It says the couple have made a decision not to have children. Well, I think so. Yeah, she's 63.
Right.
Now they could adopt, but he's 39 and she's 63, and He is actually a step-grandfather to her kids' kids. Her oldest kid is 2 years older than he is.
That's what I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
That they're the same age, basically.
And her middle child was in the class where she met Macron.
It's a really interesting story. It sounds like, it sounds like a romance novel.
Creepy.
A little creepy, yeah.
I mean, look, they're together. They've been together 10 years, right? So it's, look, I think the Woody Allen thing's creepy, but they're still married.
I agree. And they were, and he's very quick to point out, too, that even though they met when he was 15 and a student, they didn't start a relationship until he was, I think, 18 and a half. Or just over 18.
So he says.
Allegedly.
Yes, so he says. But there doesn't appear to be a whiff of scandal around this in France, except for a few people are claiming that she's his beard and that he's actually gay.
No.
But again, that doesn't seem to be that big a deal in France, and why should it be?
And if that were the case, if she is the beard, I don't think they would care anyway.
No.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hello, I'm Leon. I used to be an unhappy stockbroker, but I gave it up to travel the world and discover human kindness. Now, I'm a TV host, and best of all, I get to spend each day giving back. Because kindness is all around us. You just have to know where to look.
What a negative world. We need it now. I think I said the same thing to you last time you were on, Leon, but it's true. Hashtag go be kind. It's more than a YouTube series now. It's a way of life. And the Kindness Diaries is coming to Netflix. Or actually on Netflix now, right? Oh, where's your microphone? There you go. Started in February?
Yep, it started a few months ago.
So congratulations on your success there.
Thank you so much.
So were you a stockbroker in London?
Yeah, I was a broker in the city of London.
And you moved to Hollywood with this idea, or you just got out of London?
Well, I decided to quit my job and start traveling around the world relying on kindness.
Well, it seems like a logical idea. that is quite a leap to make.
Yeah, I mean, look, on the outside, I had everything. On the inside, I pretty much had nothing.
So you're making a bunch of money.
Yes.
But you were unhappy.
Exactly.
And you didn't enjoy getting up in the morning?
Not particularly.
Right. And you figured there's more to life than this.
Absolutely. And there was. I wanted to connect with people. I wanted to go out and see the world and meet the world. And sitting behind my desk, I wasn't really doing that.
When we think of stockbrokers, I think we can, you know, like we profile everybody, right? We can think of put you in a box, that you're probably not the most friendly person, and you probably think you're smarter than we are, and in most cases, maybe you are. did you have this kind, nice guy inside you the whole time that was yearning to be free?
I think... Yes, for sure. I mean, on the outside, I wasn't particularly pleasant, I will tell you that. But I had this sense of needing to connect with people, needing to see the best in people, needing to see the best in myself, really.
Right.
And the only way I figured out how to do it was to stop sitting behind that slab of wood and to start connecting with the rest of humanity from my heart and not just from my head.
And this is not something that you start out with and you go, well, maybe this will be on Netflix someday. This is something you start out with, is something that's sort of a humanitarian, sociological project, really, right?
Sure. I mean, for me, it's part of who I am. Whether or not there are cameras there or not, it's something that I want to connect with people. I want to kind of, like I said, meet the world. And sitting behind that desk didn't give me that capacity to do that.
How many of the strangers you encountered early thought you were nuts?
Pretty much all of them.
What did you have, an opening line or an opening move?
That's a good question. Well, I had the vintage yellow motorbike with a sidecar, which was its own opening move,
right?
Because people would see that and they'd be like, wow, what's going on?
Yeah, you know what's funny, it's interesting you chose yellow, because you have a yellow car. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be angry around yellow.
Oh, it's so true.
Was that the intent?
The yellow is the universal color of happiness.
It is.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was, I intentionally bought a yellow bike.
Okay. So you got the yellow bike and people go, okay, what's this about?
And then I would tell them that I was traveling around the world relying on kindness, and they would look at me like I was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd talk a little bit more and they'd realize I wasn't nuts. And then I would hit them with, can I stay in your house tonight? And most of them would say no.
Right.
But some of them would say yes. And that was when the magic happened, when you really, truly started to connect with that one magical person.
Right, because what you're doing then is you're breaking down the walls and you're both taking a risk and you're leaping in to get to know each other. We'll come back to some of the people you met along the way in a second. Again, the guest is Leon. I should let you do this because it's a law that all Greeks have to introduce other Greeks.
That's right.
Leon.
Oh, you want me to say it? I would say logothetis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Leon Logothetis is here and best-selling author and National Geographic TV host. And again, YouTube series on Being Kind, The Kindest Diaries, now on Netflix and available for you. Andrea.
Okay, my question to you. Do you find, I mean, I've had the pay it forward experience. You know, somebody has bought my coffee at Starbucks. I know you've done this before, sure. Stephen, the drive through. Do you find once you're open to it and once somebody does something for you, boom. Because I literally the next day thought, oh my gosh, I have to do that too. I didn't want to do it right then and there. But that it opens up kind of this whole new world of kindness.
Absolutely. And I think kindness is contagious. And really, kindness to me is just making someone feel less alone. And it's a beautiful thing if we can do that. Why not? Why not be kind? It doesn't mean that you're weak. It means that simply you're going out of your way to show someone that they matter.
And it doesn't have to be buying someone something, no. Right, too? You can. I sometimes will stop on Michigan Avenue and say, do you need help? You know, if there's tourists with
showing
mats,
care for
can
somebody.
You just, can you need help finding something?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. For example, on the journey, I couldn't accept money. And I did that on purpose because I wanted people to taking money and accepting money is an easy form of being kind.
And it changes the equation.
Exactly. But when you're kind from your heart, that's what I wanted the show to be about, to show people that that's an important part of life, being kind. It's not about money. It doesn't matter how much money you may have or may not have. On my journeys around the world, so many people with nothing gave to me in a profound way.
How about that? In a world where politicians are screaming at each other and we're dragging people off airplanes, we need this now more than ever. So let's do traffic. We'll come back. And then tell me a few stories about some of the people you've met along the way that are your favorites and a couple that are frightening you that you still have protective custody or should a protective order against. Leon Logothetis.
Yes.
Relatively close.
You got it right.
Okay. He's with us, and he's got a mission that he'd love for you to be part of, once we all be a little nicer to each other, The Kindest Diaries. He's on Netflix now, and you've got two books out?
Three.
Three books out, and you're going to have to write more now, you know.
I know. It's all good.
But it's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have.
We're talking off the air. Your mom, I was very proud of you, as any mom would be.
Yes.
But tell me a few stories about the people you met along the way. Give me a few of your favorites first, two or three people.
So my favorite, without a shadow of a doubt, was I met this chap in Pittsburgh called Tony, who was homeless. I didn't know he was homeless when I started talking to him, but I ended up asking him to stay in his house, and obviously...
He didn't have one.
But then he did something profound, and he said, if you want, you can come and stay with me. I'll feed you, I'll protect you, and I'll give you some clothes. And it was just unbelievable. Here was a man with...
At that point, you do know he's homeless.
At that point, I knew he was homeless. And
how do you not cry at that point? I'm about to cry hearing your story.
Yeah, I'm about to cry now, actually. But, you know, I stayed with him. He did everything he said, and he proved to me that true wealth is not in our wallets, it's in our hearts. You don't need to be rich to be kind.
My son taught me something too, which I think is an important lesson since we brought up homelessness. All of us, you know, are very close to being homeless. It's one bad stretch. I mean, it really is. And we should, you know, for all of us who walk by someone who's sitting on the street, and by the way, and a lot of times without even looking, and it's not people asking for money even. You just don't want to look. You don't want to, you know, part of you, I guess, human nature, you don't want to realize that somebody is in that kind of, you know, position in life. But my son taught me a while ago, and it's just, I think it's a really important lesson for everybody, is when you stop to talk to somebody who has found themselves in that position, ask them their name. Because you humanize the experience. Yeah. You know, have that sort of exchange, break that wall down. And then if you're Leon, move in with them.
All right,
give me another
point,
one.
Though. Ask
their
name.
Yeah.
Everybody.
So the beauty about Tony and the journey was that I gave back as well. So the next morning, I put him up in an apartment and I sent him back to school because he always wanted to be a chef.
Wow.
So.
Wow. How's he doing now?
He's doing good. He's still in the apartment. He's looking for a job. If you want to hire him, let me know and I'll put you in touch with him.
What city is he in?
Pittsburgh.
He's in Pittsburgh. Okay.
Yeah.
Give me another one of your favorites.
So I ended up in India, in Delhi. Okay. I started chatting with a rickshaw driver. He put me up in his house in the slums of India. He had one little small room, him and his two kids and his wife. And they insisted, he said to me, Leon, you have to sleep on the bed and I'm going to sleep on the floor. And I said to him, I said, Diru, there is no way that I'm sleeping on the bed. You sleep on the bed, I will sleep on the floor. And he looks at me, he goes, guest is God. In India, yeah. This is how we treat people. So I was like,
okay. He didn't realize, but it'd be a dishonor to him if you didn't accept his
exactly.
offer.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's why I accepted it.
Yeah.
And he used to rent his rickshaw, so he spent a lot of money renting it. And the next morning, I was privileged enough to buy him a new rickshaw.
How about that?
So cool. it was beautiful. But the thing is that people sometimes say to me, oh my God, it must have cost so much money to buy all these gifts. But the reality is that it really didn't. It really doesn't take that much to help someone else and to really shift someone's life. And it's not about money. You can shift lives by simply how you show up.
But when you fill a need, when you get to know somebody first and then you fill exactly. a need that's important in their life, exactly. that's not about money. That's about being kind.
Exactly.
All right. So I'm not looking for some horrific story here, but give me a funny one. Maybe one that went a little sideways.
A funny one. So I was in India. I don't know if you've ever been to India, but they have a river, the holiest river in India called the Ganges,
sure.
which is very holy, but also extraordinarily dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And the holy man came to me and said, I want to bless you. And I said, okay. And he says, I want to bless you in the river. And I'm like, okay, I'm not so sure about that. And he said, well, I can only bless you in the river. So I ended up going in the Ganges.
What are you wearing?
I was wearing
a loincloth. Do you completely disrobe for that?
A loincloth. Yes.
Okay. Like the one Dave has it? Yeah. Okay. So you're in your loincloth.
Yes.
And now you've got to get into the river.
I get into the river, and what goes past me is a carcass of a dead cow.
Oh God.
So that
okay,
was...
that's not the worst thing I thought he was going to say either. Yeah, so. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, that's pretty bad.
That's right.
That's
oh,
not good. It's not good.
Yeah,
that's
not what you want.
So no. You want to say holy cow, but.
Did you get right. sick?
No, fortunately, I did not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Countries you've traveled to in search of folks. You mentioned India a couple times. Where else?
I went to a country called Bhutan, which has a thing called gross national happiness, where they determine the success of the country by the happiness of the people.
That's pretty cool.
It was truly amazing. I mean, some of the people I met in Bhutan were just had so much joy in their
hearts. Isn't Bhutan where laugh therapy came from?
Is it?
I think so, where
sure.
you get groups together to laugh. There's like laugh classes and everything, because the idea if you get a bunch of people laughing, they're going to feel happy.
It's possible, but it's an amazing place. If you ever get the chance to go there, I would suggest
comedy clubs there. I kill there in Bhutan.
The
yeah.
laugh challenge,
yeah, I go to
yes.
crackers in Bhutan. It's unbelievable. Yes. And what country was particularly a struggle?
Look, I would say in certain countries, obviously, they don't speak English.
Yeah.
So that was a problem.
So the language is a barrier.
Yes. So in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand, a lot of the locals don't speak English, which is understandable because, you know, they're not an English country. But the language barrier sometimes was a problem. I would go up to people in those countries and I would have to start off my little speech by saying, do you speak English? And if they didn't, then no problemo. I'd keep on going until someone did.
Sure. And the governments in these particular countries you're visiting, because obviously you're traveling with a crew,
yeah.
Do you have to get approval for everything?
Yes. We had to get visas. And
were most of them cooperative?
Yes, until they saw the yellow bike. and then they were far less cooperative. Mm-hmm. And I had some issues in Southeast Asian border lands, let's say, to the point where in Vietnam they refused to give me the bike. I had to go to the American embassy. And
to get your bike back?
Yeah, to get my bike back. Wow. And it took like 7 or 8 days. And
how about that?
At many moments, I felt like the bike was finished.
Sure.
So
the bike's like family.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like my son.
I know you're going to be on Channel 9 this morning after 9 o'clock but, and to talk more about this. But before we get to the plugs, I think of a country like Russia or Moscow, where you know people don't seem to be terribly happy in other places. Have you done Russia?
I did Russia in a previous adventure,
okay,
and it was a bit of a challenge. They didn't like cameras at all, which I understand. You know, if you've got many decades of communism, they want their own privacy.
Sure.
So it was tough in Russia. I met some kind people, don't get me wrong, but, you know, with the authorities, it was a challenge.
Any gross generalizations you can make, like older folks are kinder than younger folks, women are kinder than men, anything like that, or does it just depend on the person?
It really depends on the person. I think ultimately, in so many ways, we think everyone's different to us, but ultimately they're not, they're the same. And that was the greatest lesson I learned.
Quite a little project you're on here, my friend.
It's been quite an adventure.
Yeah, and it continues.
Let's hope.
On Netflix, you can see The Kindness Diaries. You can also get his newest book, Live, Love, Explore. And it's part of a self-help, part travel memoir. It's an Eat, Pray, Love kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And hashtag go be kind everywhere you can and just go out and do something nice for somebody today. That's a good start, right?
It most certainly is. You have the power to change your life by just being kind.
Nice to see you here.
Thanks, man.
When you get to heaven, put in a good word for me. It's 7:32, the big story coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
7:45, we'll get to traffic here in just a second. Before we do that, though, it is the 100 days of Trump. And you remember, it wasn't that long ago that Donald Trump, and by not that long ago, I mean days ago, that Donald Trump wanted you to know. He wanted you to know, Andrea. Wanted you to know how much he's gotten done.
Mm-hmm, I know.
How much he's gotten done in the first 90 some odd days. That's what he wanted you to know.
No administration has accomplished more in the first 90 days. That includes on military, on the border, on trade, on regulation, on law enforcement. We love our law enforcement, and on government reform.
Now, he can't back up any of that with facts, but he wanted you to now. Oh, wait. Oh, this just in. He's not so crazy about the 100 days now. Seems times have changed. Since you heard that clip a second ago, now, you know, maybe not.
What follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again.
Think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days of a Trump administration. In the first 100 days, in the first 100 days, just think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days. Just in the first 100 days of a Trump administration. Secretary Clinton calls for amnesty in her first 100 days. I proposed a contract with the American voter. It's a set of promises for what I'll do in my first 100 days. We are going to ask every department head in government to provide a list of wasteful spending on projects that we can eliminate in my first 100 days.
It seems that he's not so thrilled about the 100 days now. He tweeted out this weekend, "Never came up with this stupid idea as a big stupid head." All right, he didn't say exactly that, but he said the whole construct started by FDR. Mm-hmm. By the way, a brilliant move by FDR, and he had a few of them. But when FDR becomes president in the midst of the Depression, and really at the beginning, when the Depression was really starting to cook, he needed to show that the government was trustworthy again. Mm-hmm. And there needed to be a sense of urgency to it. So he said, we're going to do this in 100 days. Well, it stuck. Yeah. Well, Trump loved the 100 days idea until this weekend. Now he says it's dumb.
He liked saying 100 days
yes.
over and over and over again. I would argue the one thing he did, and I know we'll touch on this, nominate Neil Gorsuch.
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a second. Yeah. But Sean Spicer, and I hate missing the Sean Spicer show, but Sean Spicer, who's on every day in the middle of the day doing his briefing, Sean Spicer is a guy that Trump keeps around because he's good for ratings. And you know how much Trump loves ratings. And that's not something I'm making up. That's something that's come out again and again from sources within the White House walls. Sean Spicer had trouble coming up with what Trump has accomplished. And if the Nazi thing wasn't a fireable offense, this should be.
Looking ahead to the 100-day mark and setting aside executive orders, can you say what the single piece of legislation that you are proudest that you got through Congress that was on the president's agenda?
Well, a few things on that. Number one, we're not done. We've got a little ways before we hit the 100-day mark. So I think what you've seen out of this White House is a very robust agenda of activity. There's a lot of executive orders that I think the president's been pleased with, not only what they've done or what they will do, but what they've done. I think when you look at immigration in particular, we see a very significant drop at the border. I think on jobs, there's been a lot of activity that we've been very proud to see American manufacturing and job creation. There's a lot of things that I think the president's done on veterans, on immigration, on regulatory reform. As I mentioned here, we're now at a dozen Congressional Review Act pieces of legislation that have been signed that have had, I think, a very positive impact on, or, and will have a very positive impact on job creation. When you look at the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, it's another significant one. But there's a lot, and again, we'll obviously spend some time talking about this next week. But I think we're very pleased with what the president's accomplished. And, you know, as he noted yesterday in Wisconsin, the amount that he's done overall has been significant.
We're looking for one legislative piece, Sean. One. We're looking for one.
Agree with you. That should be fireable.
We're not
right
done.
There.
We're not done. We're robust.
And come up with something bigger than a Post-it.
We got executive orders. Hey, immigration stuff.
Which have all been overturned. Or
we got jobs. We got lots of things.
Or stuck in court.
We have things. We have the best things. We come back. I'll give you an overview to set up the rest of the week. And we'll have archival sound of the best of Trump land from the first 100 days. And by the way, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to surprise you with a summation of where Trump is. And here's the summation. He's getting better.
Wait, what?
Yeah. All right, Trump's 100 days. On the eve of his 100 days, the government could have to shut down, may have to shut down, if it's not funded. Don't count on that. The continuing resolution, the old CR, will probably kick in and cover it. So that's probably the way that's going to go. All right, let's talk about the good for a second first. You mentioned Gorsuch.
Yes.
Gorsuch was a very good thing for Trump. The Syrian missile response, a very good thing for Trump. Mm-hmm. His speech to a joint session of Congress, a very good thing for Trump.
Forget about that. You're right, yeah.
The problem is those things have been few and far between, and too often he has self-sabotaged himself because in a couple of days he does or says something that takes the attention off the good and puts it on the bad. Mm-hmm. Now, on the bad side, the promises unkept. The two biggest ones politically are the wall, because every rally was, we're going to build that wall. And who's going to pay for it, Andrea?
Mexico was supposed to pay for it.
Oh, not so fast. Mm-hmm. And Obamacare, this is not just Trump. This is the Republican Party. The Republicans for years said repeal and replace, repeal and replace. Didn't get it done. That's kind of bad.
And had a big opportunity to do it.
And embarrassing. Well, they didn't have a plan.
No.
Incredibly stupid.
Mm-mm.
Now, the really bad part for Trump is, as I said, the self-sabotage is bad. The chaos is bad. There's never been a leakier White House than this. You remember that at one point, Sean Spicer wanted to determine where the leaks were coming from, and he made his entire communication staff give him the cell phones.
Yes.
Imagine this at your job. You give up your cell phone, and he goes through your apps to see if you've got any encrypted apps that you're using to leak stuff from the White House. Once those phones were handed back, and I'm not making this up, within 9 minutes, the entire thing had been leaked to the media.
Right.
The people walked out, yeah, and they said, you wouldn't believe what this guy did. He just took our phones. So the attempt to find the leaker was leaked to the media. Conflicts of interest are a problem. Nepotism is a problem still. And this whole fake news, when Trump gets backed into a corner, feels like he's in a corner, he makes stuff up. The fake news thing. The voter fraud thing. Remember, we're going to have a big investigation.
Oh,
we're going to find out where the 3 million votes went.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama wiretapped me.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not hearing a lot about that now, are
nope,
we?
Nope.
Those investigations seem to have gone away.
And the inauguration numbers, too. We're off that.
Starting
as well.
On day one.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign policy stuff, you'll remember on his first weekend, he made calls to a bunch of leaders and angered them.
Yes, including Australia.
Mike Pence is in Australia this weekend, mending some fences there. He also got off on the wrong foot with China, but then seemed to really like his visit from the president of China at Mar-a-Lago. However, things not so good with Germany still. When Angela Merkel came in and he wouldn't shake her hand and gave her a bill for their share of NATO. Like literally, like an invoice. Like a written out invoice.
Like an IOU?
Yeah, it really
like
was.
The old days, like a Post-it, yeah.
Yeah. So we don't know what he's going to do about taxes. That announcement supposedly is going to come on Wednesday. If there's something positive to be said specifically by way of policy, that would be a big deal. But we don't know. The biggest things on the agenda and the scariest things on the agenda are North Korea and Russia. Mm-hmm. North Korea, because we don't know what that little kook will do. And Russia, because we don't know what happened. We still don't know what happened. The same thing I've said since day one remains. As a president of the United States, to stand up and say, investigate me. Investigate me to the full extent. Look at my entire administration. And then if you come back clean, your approval numbers will go through the roof. Right. You'll never have a better day than that.
Will never happen, though.
And he's never, ever said it. But I stand by what I said before this segment. He's gotten better. He doesn't just fly off the handle. In the last month, I'm talking about. He doesn't just fly off the handle at a moment's notice. He doesn't just say the first thing that comes to mind. He doesn't keep, you know, sticking his foot in it. He didn't shoot himself in his foot. So he has gotten better. And I don't know if it's because they're keeping his phone from him. I don't know if because he's finally connecting with the fact that he is president of the United States and he can't say just anything. What? I'm being told he's tweeting again.
Oh, right now?
I really meant what I said, though. I meant he was getting better.
I was literally going to say, do you think this will continue?
Well, let's go to Twitter.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Everybody sing.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
Live to Channel 9, where Dean's standing by. Good morning, Dean.
Wow, you sound healthy today.
Yeah, I turned a corner. And then I kept going.
That Vicks Vapor Rub does it every time.
Yeah, but again, just 2 teaspoons. Don't take the whole jar.
Delicious.
All right, now we could start either on the sex scandal of the French presidential candidate, or we could talk about my ongoing search for the perfect pair of headphones. Which would you prefer to do?
Sex scandal.
All right, so headphones in. All right, so I'm again, if someone can help me with this, and you know, I understand, you know, this is the Steve Cochran show and this is WGN. I shouldn't need outside help for this, but I can't find anything. So I've got these neck band headphones. You know, they're the bands behind your head and the headphone wraps around your ear. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Like kind of on the lower part of your
skull. Right. I want a high end pair of these. Because the ones I'm wearing were $12, and they've got all the audio goodness of a $12 pair of headphones.
They look a little tighter than the last ones.
They do?
Maybe
my head's larger.
They look better.
So if anyone within the sound of my voice can lead me, you know, Koss is in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's places that
Or are you looking like for free ones, you mean?
No, I'll buy them, absolutely.
For promotional mention?
No, I'll pay more than
the official headphone.
I'll pay
of the
over
Steve Cochran
retail.
Show.
I just want a great pair of neckband headphones. They've got to be wired because, hey, by the way, why can't we have wireless headphones in the studio? Could we do that?
We should get wireless. That'd be great.
There's something else to bring up at the meeting today. All right, Dean,
like
so that's
wireless because you get, you know, when taxi cabs are going by, you can hear there's interference on wireless.
Oh, there is? That can be kind of amusing.
But you can go outside and hear what's going on.
Yeah, all right.
Nobody can hear you, but you'll be able to hear what's going on outside.
All right, so that's my play. I mean, I feel like I do a lot for the audience. All right, a couple things.
You never stop giving.
Right, so if you can help me out to find that perfect pair of headphones, I'd appreciate it.
I'm familiar with that. I've had the same Sony headphones for about 15 years.
What are you wearing?
Comfortable. I love them.
What are you wearing? What are they?
They're, wait, hang on a second. Let me see.
Do they go behind your neck like Steve's?
No. Like regular, just regular Sony.
Over his head.
It's the 7506, Steve.
Oh, the MDRs.
Yeah, the MDR 7506.
Yeah, that's the classics.
It's an industry standard.
Those are the classics. There's nothing wrong with those. Those
super,
are fine headphones.
Super comfy.
I want the perfect pair of headphones, and I want it called the Cochran.
like Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
Beats? You just want it to be called Cochran?
All right, for those of you who tune in for entertainment news, we're out of time.
But Steve wants it to be called Beats Like the Vegetable.
Right.
B-E-E-T-S.
Right.
B-E-E-T-S. I just do the earbuds. They're easy to pull out.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I feel like you don't hear the full sound sometimes with the earbuds. I don't. They fall.
Well,
out
Andrea,
my ears.
Andrea has selective hearing where she can pretend. Oh, I didn't hear you.
But she has good lobes. You know, she can fit them in there.
Thank you, Mary.
Yes, very nice lobes. Mine fall out all the time.
How many times?
I don't think you're supposed to put the headphones on your earlobes? Are you?
Well, you know what I mean. Her
they
ear.
Go
what
in
is
your,
it?
The, like ear, the ear cavity or whatever.
The ear cavity.
Can we add that to the list of things guys don't say to each other? Oh, she's got great
nice
lobes.
She's got a nice cavity.
Dean's lobes. You want to talk lobes? You should see Dean's lobes.
So sweet. I don't want to brag. I do have nice.
He's got lobes till Tuesday. I'm telling you that right now.
Nice earrings on those.
I've got bodacious lobes.
All right. So since Dean insisted we talk about my headphones, we will still have time to talk about the French presidential sex scandal. And also on the list, Kenny G. It's funny because we were just talking about him last week. Amber Heard and this Joni, this
Aaron Moran.
Yeah.
Joni loves Chachi.
Sad story.
So sad, so weird, so mysterious.
We'll come back and get into all of that. Coming up.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
All right, so Aaron Moran. I don't want to make stuff up here, Dean, but hasn't she been struggling for years?
She has, with personal problems, with financial problems. She lost a home that she had in California, wound up moving to southern Indiana, the very tip of southern Indiana, lived in a mobile home with her second husband and his mother. So the three of them lived in one mobile home.
Was she from there as well?
She's not. She is not from there, but I think the husband was from that southern Indiana area. Saturday afternoon, the sheriff's department in that area get a phone call about an unresponsive female. By the time the first responders get there, she's already dead. They find her already passed away, and it was Saturday, Sunday. You know, they don't do any autopsies, anything. So I would guess the next few days, we probably should be hearing what the findings are, what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you don't just drop dead at 56.
56 years old, nobody knows what happened. Neighbors in this trailer camp say that she was very friendly and very outgoing, but they have not seen her in several months, that she's been very reclusive. For the past several months.
What was the last work she had? I mean, did she do any TV in the last few years?
Not really. She had been, would do occasional little guest shots. This is quite a while ago now, with Love Boat and, like those kinds of appearances. She did a movie called Not Just Another B-Movie that was very much a B-movie and nothing special. But she had fallen on hard times, hard financial times. Paul Peterson, do you know who that is? He was the former one of the kid stars of the old Donna Reed show.
Okay,
he started a support group for former child stars
that struggle.
There's been a long line of child stars who can't deal with their fame, even more importantly, can't deal with life after their fame.
Right.
He says that he has reached out to Aaron Moran several times. He says about a half a dozen other child stars, just within the week preceding her death, also reached out to Aaron Moran to no avail. So, what that was all about, does that have something to do with the death? Was something going on, about of depression, sadness? Don't know. We just don't know right now. But it's certainly a very sad and very mysterious death. Interestingly, just to kind of emphasize how there apparently had been a history of depression, sadness, her co-stars from Happy Days, Ron Howard, who is arguably one of the nicest people in Hollywood, tweeted, "Such sad news. I'll always choose to remember you on our show, making scenes better, getting laughs, lighting up TV screens." Henry Winkler wrote, "Oh, Aaron, you finally have the peace you wanted so badly on Earth." So, I mean, that says something.
Yeah, it does. It's sad.
He was apparently aware
of her struggles.
Struggles. Scott Baio, who played Chachi, "May people remember Aaron for her contagious smile, warm heart, and animal-loving soul. I always hoped she could find peace in her life."
Wow.
So he's also sort of intimating the same thing. She was here on the TV morning news a couple of times, and I don't want to say she was not unpleasant. She was very friendly to everybody, but you could tell that, she
wasn't comfortable.
She was not comfortable in her own skin. You can tell that instantly.
Well, that's a sad deal. Very sad. Did she have kids?
No, she did not.
Okay.
Did not.
Prince for the album that wasn't going to be released. Now it's going to be released, and wasn't going to be released.
No, this is the album, the EP, the extended play album with like the five or six songs that got stopped by a judge last week. That's still stopped. No, still nothing.
Oh, happened. So this is a different one.
This is completely different. This is an album that is going to be coming out early part of June. It's an album, like a re-release of Purple Rain.
Wow.
With extended plays, alternate versions.
Yeah, see, he's got on here, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
That's,
I don't know what he did of it.
Right.
I bet he did that funky.
B-I-N-G-O, and Bingo was his name.
Oh, yeah.
Who
yeah.
knew that he had done that song? So,
I've listened to that. When is that out?
I love that. That's going to be June the 9th. That's going to be coming out. But that...
I'll listen to that with my new listener headphones.
The very fact that nobody even knew that that was coming out, that got leaked over the weekend. There's good news for Prince fans, I guess.
Over the weekend as well, and I'm not quite sure what happened, but, you know, Dean snaps whenever he brings up his name. Apparently, Kenny G was beaten with a flute. on a plane and then taken off the plane. Is that what happened?
That's very
is that
similar.
Not exactly what happened?
Had I been on that flight, that would have been more accurate.
If Zamfir was on that flight,
now,
that
look,
might have been more
accurate. Haven't airline passengers suffered enough lately? Haven't they gone through enough being dragged off planes? And then this thing the other day where a woman gets hit with a stroller. Now Kenny G is standing up and playing his saxophone. On a flight where, unless you have a parachute, you can't get off. That doesn't seem right. Now, I say that with some hesitation because it was a charity. The reason that he did it was for charity.
It wasn't like he just had it in the overhead and he got up and grabbed it.
No, Delta Airlines was asking people to make donations to an organization called Relay for Life, and if they did, they would get a special treat. And it turned out that the special treat was Kenny G walking up and down the aisle playing his saxophone. Lord.
What? Hey, what's this noise? Flight attendant? Flight attendant, I'm trying to sleep. Oh, no. It's Kenny G.
More Novocaine, Dr. Homan.
He's such a nice guy.
So 3 years of my life, this is what I listened to like every 90 minutes.
And then he had John Tesh live from Red Rock after that.
Right, and Yanni. Good 3 years over at the Smooth Jazz, Casa del Smooth.
All right, let me ask you a question. Do you think Elon Musk is one of the smartest men in the world?
I do.
Then why is he dating Amber Heard? Is he not familiar with what happened with Johnny Depp?
Amber Heard. Just finalized.
You know why? Because men are stupid.
She finalized her divorce from Johnny Depp in January.
Mm-hmm.
He finalized.
And now she's just looking for love. Doesn't matter if the guy's got any money.
Just happens to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd marry the guy. He's a billionaire, Steve.
He makes cool cars.
You know how many headphones you could get?
By the way, the listener's stepping up. Thank you very much, listeners. Get me some Jaybird X3s.
So they were spotted over the weekend and photographed. They were ziplining. They were.
Me too.
That's what, when you're Amber Heard and a billionaire, that's what you do on dates, apparently.
Yeah, and you know, if you're Elon Musk, how old's Elon Musk? He's early 50s, right?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, you think Elon Musk is going, how old is she? Oh, she's so hot. What is she, 20, 27?
45.
20, so she's 45.
Elon Musk.
I can guarantee you at 45, Elon Musk goes, I don't want a zipline. But maybe I'll get to see Amber Heard naked. All right, I'll zip line then.
He is cute. He looks like Scott Wolf.
You must have got a different picture than I have in front of me.
I don't understand. I would pay any money to hear Johnny Depp's reaction to hearing this story.
Good luck, dude. All right, and I feel like we're missing a story here. Oh, there's
the
a new
sex scandal?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All right, so the more Obama, for recognition purposes, the more Obama-like candidate of the two finalists for the presidency of France is a guy named Emmanuel Macron.
Macron.
Macron. Macron is 38 years old, and he's a moderate, and he is thought to be a runaway favorite to win, even though the race over the weekend was very close in a head-to-head poll with the female candidate whose name is
Marie Le Pen.
She's more than Donald Trump in this story.
Yes.
He's 20 points up on her in the polls. So, in other words, because we know how the polls worked out here, it should go really well for her.
So the centrist?
The centrist candidate is 20 points ahead.
20 points ahead of
Le Pen. Yeah. So, but here's the interesting side story, and this is where the French just don't care about the sex stuff. When Emmanuel Macron was 15 years old, his teacher started dating him.
No, that's when they met,
How do we know that the teacher was dating him? Because the parents were so worried, they sent him to Paris to get out of the school to go ahead and finish his studies. They end up getting together. They got married in 2007. They've been married 10 years. He's 38. She's 63.
I was just going to get some tutoring for my algebra. And all of a sudden, we fell in love.
Madame, isn't it time for my spanking?
L'amour, l'amour, l'amour.
More detention, please. More detention, please.
Pardon, I did not complete my homework.
I mean, if she was a guy, she'd be the dirty old man. So is she the dirty old lady?
Hey, je t'aime beaucoup, right?
Like, yeah, what you said.
Love is love is love.
Look, they've been together 10 years. Must be love. Emmanuel Macron.
And she has three kids, as you said.
She has three kids. One of them older than him.
Older than him, yeah.
And by the way, Dean, the second kid, her kid, was in the class when mom started hitting on him. Awkward. Awkward. In this country, big news. In France, they go, whatever. Where is my croissant?
I love that there are so many French-centric stories coming out here.
Isn't one of the Olsen twins married to that French guy that looks
Sarkozy?
He's a lot older than her, but he's really not.
See, it's a French thing.
Yeah,
they just go for older people.
Yeah,
I am totally a big fan of Full House.
You know, I was thinking, if I were to marry one of my teachers, I had a thing for Miss Butler, but I was 6, and she was pretty. You know, it wasn't like I was 15 and, you know, puberty was kicking in. Dave, which one of your teachers would you have married?
Oh, well, mine were probably not the marrying kind.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were more one-night stands?
No, let me rephrase that.
They were more grandmotherly?
I guess I did. That wasn't the right term. Yeah, grandmotherly would be the way to put it. Yeah.
Mine were like Sherman tanks.
I would have married Mr. Berg or Mr. Brown.
Which one?
Mr. Berg
or Brown. You got to pick
Mr.
one.
Brown.
You got to pick one. Berg or Brown.
No, they're so cute. No, I can't pick. Maybe we could have moved to where's that place where you can have more than one spouse?
Yeah.
You sound like you were on the L.
She was on the beach. She was on the beach briefly.
He's chasing after Mr. Burger.
The funny thing about
Berg and Mr. Brown, they both taught at Carmel.
Oh.
Yeah, the funny thing about Sandberg saying that is they're both still around, I'm sure. Right. Like Miss Butler, she'd be, I don't know, 108 now or something.
She's dead.
How about you, Dean? Who are you marrying?
I had an algebra teacher. I don't remember what her name is now.
Oh, women love that when you forget their name.
Oh, yeah.
She was extremely attractive.
But yeah. You just call her X or
right.
Y.
Honey.
Madame.
Call her something really respectful like sweetie.
So, and I'd ask Andrea, but then it would be weird because the guy's probably married and living in the suburbs.
Well, no, I was going to say most of my old teachers, not old, most of my previous teachers listen, which would be weird, but yeah. I don't remember ever macking at any of my teachers.
Yeah. Well, you never met Miss Butler.
Apparently not.
The majority of mine were, I think, like Dave's, were a little
one night stands.
Older sides, and they, like, you would always catch them walking out to their car smoking cigarettes.
Yes. Mrs. Rose, my sixth grade teacher.
I had a Mr. Rose.
Oh, I was getting scolded in the hallway once. I know you find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
And the teacher had such cigarette breath. It was stifling.
Yeah, they all smoked back.
Oh, I remember. I remember
that to this day.
I remember a gym teacher. One of the kids in class couldn't climb the rope. May have been me.
That's right.
And I remember the gym teacher with a cigarette in the corner of his mouth yelling at me in class.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Here, let me help you up the rope. Let me just grab right here.
Push up. Pull yourself up.
tobacco-stained fingers. You're never going to amount to anything in your face.
Your family hates you. All right, Dan, we'll talk to you later.
Palm all stains on the mat.
Back with the big story next, and then Ryan Nobles from CNN coming up, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
It'll be enough in the negotiation for us to move forward with either the construction or the planning, or enough for us to move forward through the end of September to get going on the border wall and border security. We expect a massive increase in military spending. We expect money for border security in this bill. It ought to be, because the president won overwhelmingly.
8:43, doesn't seem like now's the time to go ahead and make a huge issue out of the wall. Statistically, we know less people are coming than ever before. How about we save the money? Maybe there's a story there. Ryan Nobles joins us from CNN. Ryan, I have the solution to border security.
All right, what's here, Steve?
You remember CDs, as in CDs you'd listen to music on?
Yes.
Compact discs, of course, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a child of the 90s. I'm very aware of CDs, yes.
You remember what a pain in the ass they were to open?
Take the plastic
wrap that we used to wrap CDs with. You wrap the entire border with it. Nobody's getting across.
That's it right there.
That's your solution.
You, right?
That's your solution. Nobody's getting through that, I'm telling you. All right, so we got to have money to run the government. We don't know much about that in Illinois. But on the federal government level, we got to have money to run the government. We got to have money for the budget. We got to have money to stay open. Will the lights be on at the end of the week, and will it be some big soap opera midnight showdown?
I think it's definitely going to go up to the 11th hour. Whether or not Trump blinks or not, I think, is what we're going to have to figure out here, because in order to get some sort of bill passed that keeps the government operating, he's going to need at least a modicum of Democratic support. And there's no way Democrats are going to support anything that is tied to building the wall. And that was the one thing, you know, when Trump got elected and we saw Republicans win both the House and Senate, you know, one of my initial thoughts was, at least we're not going to have to deal with this constant threat of a government shutdown, because Republicans will be in control of everything and they'll just quietly pass these bills and continue to fund the government. But here we are. Usually in this scenario, you have kind of backbench members of Congress who really don't have a whole lot to lose, who stand their ground and say, well, I don't care. I want to get this very narrow focused agenda item through, and I'm going to do it on the back of the government's funding structure. It's usually not the White House that is the one that puts that big carrot in the middle of it. So the idea that he's going to try and push this through at this stage of the game seems to be a dangerous one, but that's kind of Trump's MO. And, you know, the White House believes, as you played in that bite from Ryan's previous, that he has this kind of mandate when it comes to the border wall, and that ultimately he'll win the staring contest. I think at the very least we're going to probably be nervous on Friday night.
Ryan, I'm going to call this the elephant in the room question, but how can we not pass a balanced budget or provide for government spending when he has control of both the House and the Senate? You have a Republican president. Why not just push something through, even if it's stopgap?
It's a great question, Andrew, but I think it shows us exactly just how unconventional things are in Washington right now. Just because you have an R behind your name doesn't necessarily mean that you're a Republican in the traditional sense. And Donald Trump is not a Republican in the traditional sense.
No, he's actually a Democrat in the Democrat sense.
Yeah, well, on many respects he is.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, Steve. So the idea that, you know, just because, you know, there really has become all these factions that have cropped up in Washington and on Capitol Hill, the Freedom Caucus, the Tuesday Group, whatever you want to call it, the mainstream Republicans that support Paul Ryan. So all these folks have never been in a position of governing. They don't know how to get something through. They're not interested in compromise. You know, their political careers have been forged by doing the exact opposite. So it's really not a surprise when you kind of take a step back and look that we'd be in this position, because these guys are not ever willing to cut deals. You need to give some ground in order to have these continuing resolutions passed. So it's not a surprise that we're going to see this, debated right up until the final moments. But, I think the point we need to emphasize is the fact that the White House is the one driving the division is something, you know, in the past, you know, President Obama was so frustrated by this process because he understood, you know, the difficulties and the bigger problems that existed if you didn't pay your debts, which is essentially what the continuing resolution allows the government to do, and that's to pay your debt.
Well, and the thing is, we're not hearing any of the traditional political arguments that go on, because the idea is the White House can use their ability to support or not support a continuing resolution because they want something else down the road. It's all the trading that goes on in Washington all the time. This feels more like the Trump ego that we've seen on display throughout. We're going to get some accomplishments by the end of the week, regardless of what we have to do in the process, and that's what's important, and there couldn't be anything less important.
Well, Steve, you hit the nail right on the head. The big issue here is that Trump's 100 days are slowly ticking to an end, and he really only has one major accomplishment, and that's the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch, which should have been a slam dunk because Republicans control the Senate. But the idea that he is almost at the 100-day mark and he doesn't have a new health care bill, he doesn't have a tax reform plan, he hasn't put forward any sort of infrastructure plan, he hasn't started to fund his wall, and he himself is someone that bragged repeatedly on the campaign trail about how his first 100 days were going to be so productive. I mean, the line that you hear over and over again is that we're going to win so much.
It's going to be so much winning, you're going to be tired of winning.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he frankly just hasn't won that much up until this point. So even though the president tried to, you know, throw a little bit of cold water on this idea that his first 100 days aren't important last week, there is no doubt that his administration is scrambling. They want to post victories. And the idea that this continuing resolution and that the funding of the government wasn't taken care of months ago and that put it now up against the backdrop of him hoping to post a victory on the scoreboard is a very dangerous situation. And you're right, Steve, it is part of his ego. It's part of his image. He wants to be able to go to his supporters, like when he goes to this rally on Saturday in Pennsylvania, instead of going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he wants to say, look what I did in my first 100 days, and I wasn't afraid to back down, or I would not back down to those members of Congress, even if it meant shutting down the government.
Ryan, I want to know if you put Syria on that list, bombing Syria, setting off those rockets, if you'd put that on the list too, and if you think he cares at all about having the lowest approval ratings of any president since, what was it, FDR, Steve, since they started?
Gerald Ford. Ford and pardoned Nixon.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'll say this, Andrew. Yes, I do believe that his foreign policy is the actions that he's taken abroad are definitely part of his portfolio. I definitely think that's the thing he can take out to the American people and say, see what I've done. And he can even make an argument that, like, when it comes to Syria in particular, that he did more than President Obama did during his entire 8 years. Now, those are very small moves that he's made over the course of what are very complicated problems that are going to dog him throughout his presidency. But yes, I do think the foreign policy aspect of his portfolio is important. But to your point about his approval ratings, he is absolutely obsessed with his approval ratings. He tweeted about it numerous times over the weekend. He makes the argument that you can't trust these polls because you couldn't trust the polls during the campaign. These are the same people taking these polls. He wants to cast aspersions on them in any way, shape, or form. He's very concerned about public opinion of him. That's why you see the moves that he makes in the White House changing, and that perfectly tracks back to your question about foreign policy. The actions that he's taken in related to foreign policy are completely opposite of what he talked about on the campaign trail. But he senses that there's been some positive momentum through these actions, and that's why you see him heading in that direction. And I think the thing that people often forget about Donald Trump is that he is not an ideologue. He is not someone with a rigid view of the world or politics. He is malleable. He's willing to change if he thinks it's going to help him. That's why I think the Donald Trump presidency at the beginning is going to be very different than the Donald Trump presidency at the end, because I think you're going to see him flip and flop and change positions repeatedly throughout his presidency because he is obsessed with people's perception of him.
All right. Give me, if you can, Ryan, I know you're busy, but a couple of extra minutes, if you don't mind. We've got to get traffic in here. And then if Ryan can hang with us, more with Ryan Nobles from CNN in just a second. First News Mirror. It's the great Ryan Nobles from CNN. All right, Ryan, I appreciate you hanging with us. This is sort of a borderline question for a journalist, but I think you could answer it for me. And that is this. How much time are you hearing or is being told to you is being spent managing Trump versus getting anything done inside the walls of the White House?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. And I do think that there's kind of the way the White House works is that there's there's different silos of responsibility. And, you know, there are people that are responsible for Trump's image, and there are people that are responsible for the actual work getting done. And you have to keep in mind that a lot of the functions of government are done outside of the White House within these various agencies. And, you know, there are a number of his cabinet picks that people respect quite a bit. But I do think, you know, it is a full-time job trying to track the different ways that he kind of operates. And the one thing that Donald Trump has not changed at all is kind of this fly-by-the
seat of your pants.
Administrative work. So I think what makes it difficult is, say you're tasked with a responsibility in the White House, and you're moving along trying to get that job done, and then you wake up one morning to find out that the president has tweeted about this particular topic that you're working on, and perhaps completely blown up whatever negotiation you're having with Capitol Hill. So I think that's been the difficult thing for these staffers that are just trying to manage the interactions that he has with Capitol Hill, the interactions that he has with the various agencies. And I think that's what's made the job very difficult for him. And in many respects, we've talked about this often, Steve, that Donald Trump is often his own worst enemy.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier that he's been better in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And then, of course, as soon as I said that, I look at his Twitter feed, and he's thrown 6 tweets up in 4 minutes. All the best, Ryan. Follow Ryan Nobles on social media everywhere. Go by his house. Offer to babysit the kids so he and his wife can go out and see a movie.
That'd be great. That'd be a huge help, Steve. Thank
all
you.
All the best, man. Thanks. We'll come back. CLTV joins us next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
9/11, 2 hours of sleep last night, and I'm still awake. How about that? If I doze off between now and 10, don't anybody take it personally. I've never fallen asleep on the air before. Have you guys?
No, I don't think so.
Not on the air, but...
Again, there's 500,000 people listening. It'd be rude if I did that.
Yes, it would be. Fell asleep at the typewriter once, writing a newscast, when I was first starting out in the business.
I fell asleep at a traffic light.
Did you?
With
really?
My foot on the brake.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I think that's worse than falling asleep at a typewriter.
Big time.
Yeah, well, the fact that you still have a typewriter is frightening me.
Well, this was
how'd you wake up is
many
what I
years
know.
Ago.
The cop that was behind me woke me up. It's 9:12, and we welcome to the studio psychologist Janice Clark Johnston, author of Midlife Maze, A Map to Recovery and Rediscovery After Loss. This is something that's a home run for people who listen to this show and people who are, even though I hate this phrase, of a certain age, because loss can be anything. It doesn't have to be someone died that you loved. It can be a divorce. It can be all your kids are gone. You know, they're all out chasing their own lives.
You are right. It can be job loss. It can be loss. Like in 2008, I had a client who lost his house. It can
it's
be financial loss. Yes.
And you have to grieve all of those losses in certain ways, don't you?
Well, it's a good idea if you do grieve those losses,
right.
But in the United States, we're not very good at grieving.
No. You know, and I've, you know, Andre, we've talked about this many times. Yep. I think therapy ought to be mandated, and it's a health club for your head. Everybody ought to go. Imagine how much healthier we would be if everybody took time to literally go and talk to someone like yourself about their feelings. It'd be amazing.
It would be amazing, but realistically, that's not going to happen.
Oh, come on, dream with me.
That's why I wrote this book.
Right.
Why is that a problem? Is it a pride thing? We don't think we should be grieving, or we don't think we should talk to someone about our feelings? Why is it a problem in America?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons, but one reason is that some people can't afford therapy. And
insurance hasn't gotten a lot better, has it?
No, insurance is frustrating.
Right. And that's the nice way of putting it. The reason we're talking about loss is because, and again, you're the expert here, but the concern is if you don't stop down to realize you're in this funk, it can really eat you up, right? And then days turn into weeks, turn into months, and you really have a problem.
Exactly. That's why you might be feeling like you're in a maze. You're in a maze of emotions, your thoughts, your feelings. They seem to just be jumbled, and you feel lost.
Why midlife? Midlife Maze is the book, by the way. Get 2 copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. But why midlife? Is it just because that's where all these crossroads come together?
That's part of it. A lot of crossroads come together. When you're in midlife, you're raising kids. You are raising your career. And that's the time for many people that they lose their parents. perhaps their grandparents if they have longevity. Mm-hmm. And it's the time when some people start to get sick. So illness is a loss, either your own or somebody that you know about. It could be your neighbor. But in midlife, you're starting to recognize, oh, how much time is left?
Sure.
And
you value the days more.
Mm-hmm. You do indeed.
Would you include retirement in that? Because for some people, retirement is a pretty tough deal. Even though you'd like to be retired, you go from a phase of having someone need you every day to now maybe you're not.
Exactly. For some people, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. They dream about retirement. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. And for some, they get there and they realize it's not exactly what they thought. Now what?
What's a personality map exercise? You talk about this in the book, too. Should everybody do this?
I think it would be a good idea. It's very simple. You take a piece of paper, 8x11 sheet of paper is fine. Okay. Get some markers, if your kids had some, or just grab some.
By the way, for younger people listening, paper, right. Paper are things that your parents write on. Pens are things that you no longer use. All right, go ahead.
Thank you for clarifying, Steve.
Right.
That's great.
So you draw, and some people say, oh, I can't draw.
Sure.
But actually, everybody can draw. Yeah. You map out, you sketch what are the parts of your personality. And it's really pretty revealing because drawing brings out that right hemisphere learning. You think about, oh, I remember when I was, well, if you're in midlife, you remember when you were younger. Mm-hmm. I was so spontaneous when I was younger. I was so playful when I was younger. And maybe those parts of you have slipped by.
Right.
So it can be a really good exercise, and there are directions for how to do it
in the book.
The book.
Midlife Maze. You know, some of this stuff comes home. I mean, we talk about everything on the show because I think it's important to let the audience know what's going on. And in the last 30 days, I had two pulmonary embolisms. And those can kill you, obviously. And that makes you stop down and go, time for a life check here. Now, I'm blessed in a million ways. And I've had an awful lot of fun in my life, but I don't want the fun to end now. And one thing I noticed in the midst of, you know, recovering from this or trying to recover from this is I got to get a little more fun in my life. Because you know what? Sitting around ain't that much fun. So I went out and played 18 holes of golf yesterday. I'm a golf nut. Just something little like that helps. But I do think that even when we get older and we maybe have more time and more means, we kind of forget how to have fun.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you rediscovered fun for your
life. And you don't
life.
Have to almost die for that, by the way, kids.
Good
and
idea.
It doesn't have to be something huge. You know, it could be taking a walk, going to a store, making a purchase online. Hey.
Right. Right? Shopping's your thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, being in the present moment is the thing. And knowing what is happening right now. Because a lot of us spend time in the past sort of looking at, oh, I wish I could have, I wonder if I had. And we can't redo the past, nor can we really fix the future. But a lot of people spend their time in the past or thinking about the future instead of being in the present moment. So that's a part of how you rediscover.
Hard to stay in the moment, isn't it?
It's very hard. Yes.
And it is key. You know, the other thing that just spurred a thought from what you had just said is there's lots of folks who get to midlife and family members, because it's a lifetime pattern or habit, continue to take advantage of them. I mean, it's not some intentional hurtful thing. It's just, well, you always did this for me or you always did that for me. And maybe you'd like to do a little more, a few more things for yourself, but you feel selfish by actually taking care of yourself. How do you tell people not to be selfish or that it's okay to be selfish because you're taking care of you?
Well, I think meeting your basic needs is important, and it doesn't really matter what your age is, but certainly in midlife, one of the things you have to take care of is your basic level of energy. So you have to eat nutritious food, you have to get enough sleep, you have to exercise. I'm a huge proponent of exercise. And if you don't take care of your basic needs, probably everything else in your life is going to be a bit troublesome.
If you can't afford therapy, I mean, obviously read the book, but how do you get past something? You know, I know a lot of people, it's different for everybody, but someone says, well, just get over it. But what's important to you might not be as important.
You mean like a slight or somebody hurt your feelings
anything,
or something?
Yeah, something like that. You know, might, and I, is it easier for men to get over things than women?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's tough for everybody. Yeah. So I don't think there's a difference there. But yes, you're right that our culture wants you to take 3 days off work if somebody dies and then right back in the saddle. It's not that easy. So your question is a pretty deep topic, but for basics, I think having a few rituals can help you out. One of the most important things that I found was helpful when my husband died of a sudden heart attack was to keep a gratitude journal. And it's very simple. It sounds complicated, but it's actually very simple. So keeping some kind of journal or just pieces of paper, I like writing rather than doing it on the computer, but you could do it on the computer as well.
Anything to get those thoughts down, right? Get them out.
Yep. Before you go to bed, write down a couple of things that you're grateful for. And it serves two purposes. Not only are you thinking about, wow, that was really special that I talked with a certain person today.
Right.
But the next day that may be a downer and you may be having a really sad day because you're thinking in the past, you're thinking about your loss, you have that little thought, oh, I better think of something that I'm grateful for because I have to have something to write down tonight.
That's cool.
Dave, I think you're blessed in a way, we all are, but you're blessed in a way too to still have your dad around who's 93 years old and incredibly active.
Yeah.
And you don't have to sit around here worrying about him because, you know, he's doing fine. And I'm guessing he's an inspiration to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that, you know, I watched him go through his midlife, always stayed active, always. And then in later years dealt as a caregiver to my mother when she was dying, but still found other ways to feel useful, to feel productive, to get involved community-wise and whatnot. And I think that helped him a lot get through that.
What a great role model for you.
No, right. Absolutely.
And he can still ground him, too.
Yes, yeah, he has many times.
I'll let you go on this, and I don't want to go backwards, but I do want to let people know that this is not your first book. And there's a book you wrote called It Takes a Child to Raise a Parent, Stories of Evolving Child and Parent Development. And in this process of dealing with loss, one of the things that, and I readily admit this, I struggled with my son getting married and having his own life.
Yes.
And it took me a while to get used to the idea. I don't know if you went through this, Dave.
Yes, I did.
But it's the greatest thing in the world to see your kid or your kids happy and fulfilled. And guess what? They still want you around. It's different, but it can be a good different. Is that the overall message?
Well, the first book I wrote was really to help parents grow up because it's pretty tough being a parent.
Right.
And I know I learned a great deal from my two children, but the clients in my practice were beginning to see how important it was to listen to what their kid had to say, not just in the teenage years, but earlier too, because children have a way of teaching us, and each child brings us up in a different way. So that is an important book too. I would urge the listeners to get that one as well. It's a great baby shower present.
We should get the whole set.
There you go. I love it, Steve.
Get the whole set. All right, the new book, Midlife Maze, A Map to Recovery and Rediscovery After Loss, and It Takes a Child to Raise a Parent, is also out and available everywhere. Oak Park's own Janice Clark Johnson. Nice to see you. And thanks for the information.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you being here. 9:23. More coming up, 7:20 WGN. Do you like the list of 25 things every house needs from Amazon?
Yes.
Okay. What is Amazon Basics? Is that a specific service of Amazon?
Is it like Prime?
Like the non-Prime would be the basics?
I'm an Amazon Prime guy, so I don't know.
So are we. So.
Yeah.
Can I get your password?
Yeah,
sure. Because probably. I don't buy a ton on Amazon, but I can start and use your Prime.
It's WGN 720.
So you go and you shop What? You shop like the individual retailers?
I do, yeah. If I'm looking for, you know, a coat, I'll go to North Face. If I'm looking for a, you know, pair of shoes, I'll go to Macy's. You know, I go right to the retailer.
Okay. 25 things you probably need from Amazon Basics. Sandberg, what is Amazon Basics? You should know this. You know everything, Sandberg.
Is she a primer?
I don't know. She's looking it up in Google now, and she's going to tell me she knew the whole time.
Yeah, we have Amazon Prime, and I don't know what that is either.
Basics. Let me check.
Amazon Basics is what the service is called. Do we know what it is? No, not heard of it. From Amazon Basics, here's what you need. You need a yoga mat.
You need a yoga mat.
You need a personalized yoga mat from Amazon Basics.
Oh, personalized.
Well, it can be. You could have, you know, because
put your little name on it.
Well, you don't want, you know, if you do enough yoga, like if you're in a yoga studio like I am every day, you don't want to just leave your mat where anybody can pick it up.
Right. But you're doing the hot yoga too, right?
I just walk through the studio on the way to this ice cream place I went.
But you can use your yoga mat for stuff at home too, like sit-ups. I mean, it doesn't just have to be for yoga class.
This is
it?
True. But when Steve first got sick at the beginning of this month, the first thing I said was there's a hot yoga studio in Naperville that I think that he should visit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And do I have a yogi yet? What my yogi's name?
You don't have one yet.
Do I have a boo-boo?
No.
Amazon Basics 18-piece dinnerware set, $32. That's pretty good if you're just moving in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just shacking up. How about this? Amazon Basics AA rechargeable batteries.
Yeah, but you go through a lot of batteries.
$30
at our house because the video games.
Do you do the rechargeables?
No.
I've never done those.
No. We have a system where Patrick takes them out of the devices and then maybe leaves them in between the couch cushions and things like that.
How about a digital luggage scale? Because you have to know how much your luggage weighs when the airlines screw you.
That's a great idea.
I just bought one of those last week. Oh, I paid $6.99.
Where'd you get yours?
iTech Deals.
Okay.
It's like techie type stuff. But that's the best, yeah, because you don't want to overpay. If you get to the airport and you're at 51 pounds with your luggage,
I like the gamble of it. When you get up there and you put it on there and the number starts.
Come on, show me the money.
Price is right, kind of.
You know what cracks me up, though? If I travel with someone and I'm a pound over, you know, then that person will say, oh, well, I'll take, you know, mm-hmm. let me take some of your clothes. We're all going on the same plane.
Right.
I don't understand what the difference is.
Amazon velvet hangers. We have these velvet hangers?
Yeah, we do,
They're
too.
They're great.
Yeah. I just bought some for Catherine.
Yeah.
Why are they great?
$15 for
the stuff doesn't fall off.
It doesn't slip off of them. Yeah.
Oh.
And they're curved, so they don't leave any like hanger marks.
I hate that. Yeah. Tell me if I ever have a hanger mark.
Portable Bluetooth speaker. It's $20. You can get a Bluetooth speaker anywhere. You get a Bluetooth speaker with a Philip now.
Yeah.
You know they make ones for golf carts now that just kind of wrap around and are magnets.
I did not know that. Amazon Basic soft side luggage, $55 for the bag.
That's a good
Is it a duffel bag or an actual luggage?
Yeah, it's a one-piece luggage with the wheels and the spinners on them. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah, but is it black? Because then it looks like everyone else's.
I might need that.
Well, that's what haven't you seen when the luggage comes off and somebody's got ribbons tied around?
Yeah,
and stuff?
That cracks me up.
Yeah.
A bow?
Yeah.
Well, Mary, do you have ribbon on yours?
No.
You do something.
That's dorky.
It's not dorky if you do it right.
It's dorky, just so
it
you guys
totally
know.
Wait
it's dorky.
Dave puts on his luggage.
Dave, you can get Dave's an Amazon Basics classic backpack, even though I think you're too old to wear a backpack.
I have a backpack.
I know, and I think you're too old to wear it. $12.
Oh, that's a good price.
That's a good price.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
When you're a drug mule for the cartel you're involved in Mexico, that'd be perfect. iPhone 7 case, $1.
Ooh.
$1.
I got to get the iPhone 7 first.
Hyperallergenic mattress topper, $25.
What's a mattress topper?
It's like a mattress pad.
For
people with allergies.
Oh.
All right, now why would you need this? A digital kitchen scale with LCD display. What are you weighing in the kitchen?
If you're like making pizza dough or, you know, like
or if you're on Weight
hamburgers.
Watchers. If you're on Weight Watchers.
If you weigh yourself.
No, you have to weigh all the food. So,
I weigh this much right now, so here's what I'll eat.
The luggage scale is a little more practical.
You jump up on the counter.
Okay. Why couldn't you just use the luggage scale?
That's a good point, Dave. Dave, that's a good way to save money. You're exactly
and
right.
And break. With your bow.
How about an Amazon Basics medicine ball? $25.
That'd be good for the abs.
Yeah.
It'd also be great to throw at somebody.
Oh, yeah. Those are awesome.
How much is it?
$25.
How many pounds?
It seems high, doesn't it?
Yeah,
they're
how many
expensive
pounds?
Medicine balls because they're heavy.
We should all sit on those.
I mean, it
here.
Just goes on and on. I've never heard of this service, Amazon Basics, but it's basically all the crap you need, and it's cheaper.
It seems like the daily stuff, like chargers and things.
That's their slogan, all the crap you
all
need,
crap
and it's
you
cheaper.
Need.
Yeah, I had to buy a light bulb over the weekend. I haven't done that in ages.
It's very complicated now.
If you buy a light bulb, but if you buy a light bulb now, you won't buy one again until you're dead.
And that's probably true.
Once you're dead, don't buy any lights.
There you go. Just do it in the dark.
9:32. Big story next. 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
104-95. And this Eastern Conference best of seven series is now tied at 2 games apiece.
You don't come out with any energy in the first quarter. So we have plenty of energy in that second half. If we start playing at the beginning of the game like we do to get out of that hole, we'd probably be up, or at least we wouldn't be down that much.
In a word, whoops. What was 2-0 is now 2-2. Mark Carman, our resident basketball junkie, joins us now. Hi, Carms.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
You need a hug?
A little bit. Mrs. Babe for me, by the way, Steve. She was an outstanding teacher at Highland Park High School, and I just wanted to, your earlier conversation with Dean, I wanted to get that in there. Mrs. Babe, the last name, did live up to the billing.
Mrs. Babe?
This is the woman that Carm wanted to diddle.
Babe.
In honor of Macron, the potential new president of France.
Yes, correct. Hey, Steve, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm taking questions. Let's go ahead. Caller, go ahead.
If you started last night and played 5 minutes for the Bulls, you were on the court for all of 5 minutes.
Yep.
How bad do you think you'd do?
I think, well, listen, I just for the comedy, I think I could get a couple of shots off. Now, I think I could give you a solid five. It'd be mostly on the perimeter. But you drop the right pass into me from 15, and if I can punch the guy nearest me, I could probably drain one for you, maybe two.
Right. I think you could, too. The reason why I say it is, you know, Jerry Grant started. He played 5 minutes. He was minus 10, missed all three shots, one three-pointer. Michael Carter-Williams, the Bulls' backup point guard, played 8 minutes. He was minus 11. So for every moment, those 13 minutes that those two were on the court, the Bulls were minus 22. They lost by 9. Not to get into the numbers too much, but I would hypothesize that Steve Cochran could almost do as well as both Jerry and Grant and Michael Carter-Williams. And why those two were playing last night is on Fred Hoiberg. You can now proceed with the interview.
Thank you. Do you believe that Fred Hoiberg will be coaching this team next year?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, you do?
There's no way they're getting... Yeah, I do. I do.
Are you creative?
I think so. If he wants to. And that, he seemed...
By the way, I've got nothing against Fred Hoiberg. Right. I just have a theory that if you're a white guy named Fred, you shouldn't be an NBA coach. There's other jobs.
Well, it's a rather small group, probably. But, you know, he may have found a guy in Isaiah Cannon
that kid's
last
good.
Night. Who when he finally got the opportunity, did play pretty well. But, Carm, why do you think we haven't seen Denzel Valentine in this series when the Bulls are so desperately needing somebody?
Denzel Washington, for that matter.
Or Denzel Washington. when the Bulls so desperately need somebody to come in and make a shot. And I thought, I understand he's a work in progress, but I thought he's shown enough this year to maybe come in and hit a shot once in a while for him when they really needed someone to do that.
Dave, I completely agree with you. And that guy was a winner at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. He's been a winner at times when he's had an opportunity this year. And when you're going 11 deep on the bench, you would think that guy would get a shot at some point. I mean, they went all the way down to Cannon, which they should have done a lot earlier. And I have no idea why in the middle of the season Fred Hoiberg just decided that he couldn't play when you had the option that you had a point guard. I mean, Isaiah Cannon has been a credible backup point guard in this league, and he just got buried all the way back in December and didn't play again with any meaningful minutes until, you know, like one game in February. This is a guy that I guess when Fred makes up his decision on someone, sort of like he's done with Denzel, Dave, he doesn't change his mind very easily. He's got to get to complete desperation, and apparently he hasn't reached that yet with Denzel.
Mark, you probably watch more NBA basketball than anybody at the station.
That's why he's not married. Doesn't have a girlfriend.
Well, I didn't really want to go there, but good point. But as you watch it, I mean, I don't think this is a news flash that carrying and traveling are mainstays of the NBA. I mean, it happens. So when Fred Hoiberg after the game says that Isaiah Thomas carries the ball all the time, he's getting away with it, and they don't call it, and they're supposed to call it, isn't he really, at that point, lobbying to get a call or two when this series moves to Boston?
They don't call traveling. Traveling gets called once a week.
I mean, it never gets called.
No.
Right? I mean, so what's the point of saying that?
Well, see, okay. When he said that, I started looking around the room because I was stunned. I'm like, has this been a thing? Have I been sleeping on this? But nobody knew that this was a huge issue for Fred. And, you know, for quiet Fred Hoiberg to get up there and all of a sudden take on the officials, it's just, this is not going to end well for him. You're not going to see any calls on Isaiah Thomas in game five. I'll be stunned if that happens. It was totally out of left field and just kind of a bizarre little, I don't know, mountain to climb up on. You know, Isaiah Thomas carries the basketball. He does what like 95% of players in the NBA do. Yeah. I mean, come on, man. I didn't get it at all.
Can the Bulls get one and bring it back here?
I actually thought they showed signs last night, Steve. They were way more competitive. Friday was completely atrocious. Last night, if they didn't start terrible, and I think they might have found a formula here with Cannon and perhaps, I don't know, maybe even Denzel Valentine might come in there behind him at some point, because I don't think they go back to either Grant or Carter Williams. I think they can maybe sneak out one and get to seven. I give that like a 18% chance.
It'll be fun. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, I mean, I was pulling my hair out last night watching it. It was very entertaining, albeit disappointing.
I got to tell you, don't pull your hair out, because speaking from the one perspective, the one person on the show can tell you, don't pull your hair out.
Well, thank you, Steve. We'll see. I'm willing to make some follicle losses to see the Bulls into the second round if this can happen. So,
it's Mark Carman. He watches too much basketball, but he does it for you. I heard you with Harry Tynowitz this week, and I like you and Harry together.
Thanks, Steve. Harry and I have been having a lot of fun.
Harry always comes up with some dumb game that occurs to him in in some hallucination. And then
the green game.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, I thought this is a really stupid game, yet I was fascinated and I listened to it. So, but I love Harry, and it's nice to hear Harry on the radio. It's a big Harry fan. She loves Jennifer Aniston and Harry. It's Sandberg.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
It's 9:50. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. 9:52, Bill and Wendy at 10, and then Bill and Wendy with their special noon hour, their magical noon hour, which you can hear at WGNradio.com. Ryan Burrow standing by now as President Obama's in town to make a speech today. Did this get pushed back already?
You know, we initially thought this thing was going to start at 9 o'clock, but it's 11 o'clock now. But, the president's been busy this weekend.
He's never been known for being on time.
That's true. I mean, he's still the president, still has the security detail, and really, it's not that far of a commute for him. But, I'm interested to find out, too, how that works for him. Obviously, he spent the night at his Kenwood home. I assume he's got to get the mail, right? It's all that mail that's been backed up, and, he's got to check all those
Hey, Michelle, we got one of those coupon envelopes.
Yeah,
all those things you do, when you get back from vacation, go flush all the toilets, make sure there's no, all the electricity is working, turn on the Comcast and the AT&T or whatever. So, it's been a working trip for him. He yesterday met with a group of, at-risk youth on the South Side, invited by Arne Duncan. The goal of this organization is to try to steer them to jobs and training and things they need to do to be on the right career path and stay away from gangs and drugs and things of that nature. And then later did, of course, some fundraising for the library and museum. And then today he's got this event going on where he's invited community leaders, especially youth leaders, to talk about civic engagement and just trying to keep people politically involved. So especially the younger generation doesn't just throw up their hands and just say, oh, that's city government, or oh, that's state government, or oh, that's Washington, D.C., like we've been doing for the last few years.
Ryan, the early buzz is that the former president said that he's not going to bring up Donald Trump during this speech. It's just going to be focused on Chicago and at-risk youth and the programs that he wants to tout, and basically talk about just being citizen Obama right now. But I kind of find that hard to believe. I kind of find it hard to believe that the Trump name or the Trump administration or the looming government shutdown won't come up at some point, somehow.
you know, that is kind of the unwritten rule for presidents who have left office to kind of back off. They know the pressures of the job. They know, you know, not physically being in the Oval Office. They don't exactly know, you know, who's in whose ear at any time. But President Obama did say in his farewell address that if he sees someone being discriminated against or something that is hurting one sector of, you know, Americans, that he will speak up. So we'll see if any of that's brought up. This is really, it seems to me like he's just trying to begin this process and engage people. And as far as the library museum goes, it seems like he's still kind of fielding suggestions for, you know, projects that the center can work on and kind of directions to go. So kind of the beginning of the process, I suppose.
I heard he's going card catalog. He's going old school at the library.
Right? Yeah. He's made it very clear to Ryan, and we've seen him back, I think, once or twice already, that he's made it very clear he will be a presence here in Chicago because of the foundation and the building of the library, and now the Jackson Park revitalization, too, with the golf courses that they're going to be doing as part of that South Shore revitalization and whatnot. So is that what you're hearing, too, that this is just kind of the beginning of his citizenship here in Chicago?
Sounds like it, and I don't think he can get out of the timeshare, so maybe Steve can help him out with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, timeshare exit team. President Obama, timeshare exit team.
No, but I mean, he's got a place in D.C. They've got an office there, about 20 staffers still working for the office. He's got his place here in Chicago where he can continue to commute back and forth to, but hey, he's going to be bopping around this country quite a bit. It looks like he's got an event scheduled for early May where he's going to receive an award in Boston. He's going to go to Germany as well to speak there with Angela Merkel. So, you know, he's going to continue to push for constant political engagement, especially with younger generations of people. And I don't know. We'll see where this goes. I think that the thought everyone has lurking in the back of their head is, OK, is he going to be the kingmaker now? Is he going to be the person who sets the Democratic Party straight or tries to make some sense out of the political atmosphere we see right now? And I don't really know if that's what he's trying to do.
He may not want to, but it's hard to argue that he's not the number one Democrat.
You know, that's an interesting point, and we'll see what kind of role he plays as we start looking at, you know, 3 years from now, which, you know, seems like a long time off, but it won't be.
Thanks, bud. Good luck today. And
all right, take care.
Ryan Burrow watching for President Obama back in town. 9:57, Bill and Wendy next, and thanks, everybody, at CLTV for watching.